a drug overdose, then cut up and put in a wheelie bin. That is what prosecutors allege Cherie Glastonbury did to her partner, 55-year-old Geoffrey McLean. On the case of the wheelie bin murder, we'll follow the murder trial of Cherie Glastonbury and three co-accused as they defend charges relating to Geoffrey's death. Search for the Case Law podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you don't miss an episode.
Donald Trump says it's a scam to say that climate change is a threat to public health. So he's killed off a scientific finding that says it is. The endangerment finding was the basis for nearly all climate laws in the United States. So now it's gone, well, dirty industry can flourish again, with one of the biggest winners, America's petrol car industry. Today, ANU climate expert Christian Downey on what happens when one of the world's largest polluters gives up on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Christian, Donald Trump has always said that climate change is a hoax. He's described it as a con job. He's been doing that for a while, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, I don't think there's a president in US history that's really presented, you know, such a threat to global efforts to cut pollution as Trump has. As you say, he's talked about climate change as a hoax, as a scam. This has been a constant refrain for him for many years now.
So Obama's talking about all of this with the global warming and that, and a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean,
whatever the hell happens, this climate change, it's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world, in my opinion. All of these predictions made by the United Nations and many others, often for bad reasons, were wrong. They were made by stupid people, the global warming hoax.
Yeah, he's exited the Paris Climate Accord twice. And, of course, he loves to say, drill, baby, drill.
As you've heard me say many times, we have more liquid gold under our feet than any nation on Earth, and by far. And now I fully authorize the most talented team ever assembled to go and get it. It's called Drill, Baby, Drill.
He loves oil.
Well, look, the Republican Party that President Trump leads, I guess, has always historically been close to the oil industry. But you'd have to say, I think he's taken it to a whole new level. Mm. I mean, to give you an example, you've got to remember that in, I think it was some months out from the election, the most recent election, Trump actually hosted oil industry executives from firms such as ExxonMobil, Chevron, ConocoPhillips and others at his Mar-a-Lago club down in Florida. And it was reported that he basically said to them, if you donate $1 billion to my election campaign, you know, I'll be a friend of the oil industry. Now, presumably, the unspoken deal was that if they did, he would deliver on their wishes, including rolling back climate policy. Mm. Now, the oil industry may not have provided $1 billion to his election campaign, but they certainly provided millions of dollars. Certainly have to say the oil industry is getting value for money with President Trump in the White House.
All right. Well, Christian, let's work through now what Trump has actually done to ensure the US backtracks from any commitment to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Now, he has done away with or rubbed out the scientific finding that climate change endangers human health and the environment.
We are officially terminating the so-called endangerment finding, a disastrous Obama-era policy that severely damaged the American auto industry and massively drove up prices for American consumers.
Now, that was actually introduced during the Obama years. So just explain that finding.
Yeah, of course. So there's a bit of a backstory to this. As you said, this was the endangerment finding was put in place in 2009 when President Obama was in his first year in the White House. Basically, what it said was that greenhouse gases are bad, and they're a threat to public health, human welfare, and so the Environmental Protection Agency or the EPA needs to regulate them. Now, the reason that President Obama administration did this was because previously the state of Massachusetts had sued the EPA for not regulating greenhouse gases under what's known as the Clean Air Act. This is a piece of legislation that had been in place since the 1970s. So when the Supreme Court agreed with the state of Massachusetts, the Obama administration said, great, we're going to make this endangerment finding. And it's really been a foundation for a whole range of different environmental regulations for some time. So by repealing it, or at least announcing that last week, what he's doing is really trying to remove the foundations for a whole range of climate regulations.
Because this finding, it underpinned regulations that set emission standards, right, for cars, power plants, the oil and gas industry. It's pretty pivotal.
Exactly.
So President Trump, he has described this finding as radical, and he's announced this decision to get rid of it with the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Lee Zeldin.
The Obama and Biden administrations used it to steamroll into existence a left-wing wish list of costly climate policies, electric vehicle mandates, and other requirements that assaulted consumer choice and affordability.
Just tell me what they've been saying in defense of this decision.
Well, it's often hard to make sense of Trump's reasoning. I mean, much of what he's saying is based on falsehoods, not facts. I think if you really want to understand why he's rolling back some of these policies, you need to think about what we were talking about a moment ago and his relationship with some of these industries like oil and gas. Mm. I mean, his administration is really delivering for industries that have supported him, and also the network of organizations. So we know that there's think tanks like the Heartland Institute, industry lobby groups like the American Petroleum Institute, just to name a few, that have been campaigning against climate policy for decades and have directly and indirectly supported Trump's campaign. So you've got this network of organizations that have obstructed climate action. I think what we're seeing from the Trump administration is really a function of the political campaigns of those groups. Mm. Now, that's obviously bad for the climate. It's bad for everyday Americans who want to breathe clean air. And it's also going to damage clean energy industries. So we know already there's plenty of science of the damaging health impacts from many of these pollutants. So there are serious health implications from this decision that the Trump administration's making. And sadly, you know, many Americans will suffer from this firsthand.
And it seems like for Trump, a lot of this is about the car industry.
You're going to get a better car. You're going to get a car that starts easier, a car that works better for a lot less money.
It's about the economy. It's about money, right?
Yeah, I think money, you know, you've really got to follow the money and see where the money's going, who's supporting his campaign, which industries are pushing for this. Because I think, you know, we have seen that he's very much, in some cases, a transactional president. And as I mentioned, I think he is delivering for particular emissions-intensive industries that have wanted some of these climate policies that were put in place over recent decades taken away.
Well, Carolyn Leavitt, the White House press secretary, she reckons the average per vehicle saving will be more than $2,400.
This will be the largest deregulatory action in American history, and it will save the American people $1.3 trillion in crushing regulations.
What does it mean for the EV landscape in the United States? Because, of course, we've got Elon Musk and his Teslas. It was seen to be leading the world. Will that continue?
I think China now really leads the world in EVs. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the developments there on batteries. We're seeing prices come down on Chinese vehicles. Their exports of Chinese vehicles now are surging in a whole range of other markets. So it's hard to see, at least in the near term, US automakers catching up with the Chinese. But what it does mean is I think that the uptake of electric vehicles in the US car market will be much slower than they would have been without many of the policies that Trump is putting in place.
All right, well, Christian, let's come in a moment to what this decision might mean for the global climate. But there are, of course, efforts underway to stop this already. California's Governor Gavin Newsom, he's promised a court challenge, and it looks likely, doesn't it, that it will end up in the courts in America.
Yeah, you're right. I think legal challenges will come thick and fast. We'll see environmental groups, we'll see Democratic-controlled states like California mount legal cases to challenge this repeal. And as you said, we've already seen statements from Gavin Newsom.
He's trying to recreate the 19th century. He's a wholly owned subsidiary of big oil, gas, and coal. It is code red in terms of American leadership in this space.
I saw statements in the press yesterday from various U.S. environmental NGOs, such as the National Resources Defense Council, saying, you know, we'll take this to the courts. I guess the big question is, can they win? Typically, you would have thought that the Supreme Court would uphold the endangerment finding if it gets all the way up to the Supreme Court. But given the state of the conservative Supreme Court in the U.S. right now, my guess is the Trump administration is banking that the conservative justice majority there will side with them. But whatever happens, we're talking about several years or more, I'd say, of litigation before we get an outcome.
Okay, but tell me, if the litigation does fail and the courts don't stop this, do we know what it could mean for emissions? Are there predictions around that?
Well, the problem is that the US is the second largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the world after China. So if it doesn't cut pollution, you know, our international climate goals are going to be further out of reach. So the announcement this week will mean that US emissions are going to be higher than they otherwise would have been, worsening the impacts of climate change, not only in the US, but around the world. I haven't seen myself any specific projections yet of what this announcement will mean on its own. But we know it will increase greenhouse gas emissions. I mean, the good news is, of course, that China's emissions, China being the largest emitter in the world, its emissions are peaking and it's now leading the world in renewable energies and technologies. But the problem we face is if we're going to combat climate change, we obviously need the US and China on board. And clearly the US is dragging its feet right now.
Well, Christian, let's now turn to what it means for nations like Australia and others that are working to reduce emissions. Now, this shouldn't have an impact on what we're doing immediately, should it?
Look, I don't think so. I think the vast majority of governments around the world, including in Australia, they understand the science of climate change. They understand what's at stake. So I don't see that happening. That said, what I think it might do is embolden some political parties, some conservative groups here in Australia that have always denied the science of climate change. And so we may see those types of groups kind of use this decision by the Trump administration really to further their own disinformation campaigns. But I can't see it affecting state governments or our federal governments because, unlike the US, most political leaders in this country do understand the science, even if they don't always act consistently with it. There isn't the attacks on science that we're seeing in the United States.
I guess that's with the Labor government federally in place. Anything could change, I suppose, if that also changes at the next election.
Yeah, politics do change quickly.
What about this other big player, China? How could it respond to this? Are there opportunities here for it and for other countries?
Well, China's already winning the renewable technology race. China's now the world's largest producer of solar panels, wind turbines, batteries, EVs, you name it, China's in the lead. So I think the US is only going to fall further behind as it doubles down on fossil fuels. But the problem for the US is that the fossil fuel industry is actually not in the best shape right now. In many jurisdictions, the economics around fossil fuels, whether you're talking about coal-fired power plants or gas heating or electric vehicles, just don't stack up. Renewables are cheaper, they're getting cheaper. I think that's a reason, you know, why we're seeing one in every three households in Australia now has solar panels on their roof. It's not just because Australians get climate change, it's because, you know, we can all see the financial benefits as our power prices come down. So I think we'll see all the big players, including China, just double down on renewables. Mm-hmm. And given Australia's vast solar and wind resources, I think we're well placed to do the same.
So you don't see other nations following Trump's lead here?
Well, I think we might see some countries, you know, that have always, opposed climate action becoming more emboldened too. I'm thinking of countries like Russia, countries like Saudi Arabia. But for the most part, I think many countries that are already embracing green energy across Europe, across parts of Asia, will continue to do so.
And when Trump's gone, though, how hard is it to restore what he's actually undone?
Well, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. I don't think it's something that would happen even in one term of a Democratic administration. The damage that the Trump administration is doing on the climate front, but also, of course, to many of the democratic institutions in the US will take many years to restore.
Christian Downey is a professor in the School of Regulation and Global Governance at the Australian National University. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Sam Dunn. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.